This week on the BOAG World Web Design Podcast, quality versus speed, and what is the job of a web designer anyway? Hello and welcome to BOAGworld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name's Paul BOAG and joining me today is Marcus. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul.
How are you feeling, mate?
I'm all right. How are you?
The University of Strathclyde broke me last week. That's what I'm concluding.
Yes.
So I was up at the University of Strathclyde last week, kicking off a new project, which we decided to do in an agile way. Mm. And there were quite a lot of internal expectations about what would be produced and what they would see. And we got maybe a bit over-enthusiastic too. And we just broke ourselves. We did far too much. It was huge fun, mine. It was really good fun working like that. But, yeah.
Do you think that agile is a young man's game?
Lee described it at one point, which I thought this is very Lee. He described it as management's way of getting people to do more than they want to, which is supposedly completely against the principle of agile, because agile, the whole idea is that you agree together what to do. Mm. But I think this is just, his argument was this is just a ruse on the part of management to get you to agree to more than you really are comfortable with doing. And then you have to deliver it because you're responsible for agreeing to it.
Yes, that's what it is. It's putting the responsibility onto the people who are doing the work, what you're asking people to do is twice as much as they normally would.
Yes. we tried to do more than we should have agreed to do. Yeah. And you know what it's like once you get going. And I wrote right up in the first meeting when we agreed to have a go at all this stuff, I said it's okay to fail. You know, if we don't manage to do it all, it's not the end of the world kind of attitude. But you get it into your head, don't you? Mm. Or I do. I think Chris and Lee, who'd gone up with me, and the rest of the team would have quite happily rolled over and given in. But I'm that kind of obsessive compulsive character. So yes, we managed to do it all, and it's come out really well. We've got now a couple of weeks sprint of a tidy up before we try the next thing. So we've got a slower period at the moment, which is good.
Yes. So to allow you to die in.
Yes. Well, no, we've got stuff to do as well, unfortunately, but there you go. So, yes, that was good. And then I came back from that, and my house was full of sick people. And, of course, I was knackered, so they promptly gave me their sickness. Mm. So I'm now dying.
Well, I've done that. I died in the last episode.
Well, actually, we've got to apologise, because there was no last episode.
That's true, actually, yes.
Because this is episode 10, which should have been out last week, but is out this week instead, because I was up in Glasgow trying to be agile, and apparently agile doesn't give you time to record a podcast in the
no,
middle of it.
We kept trying, didn't we? We kept saying, well, we'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then it never happened.
Well, we were due to do it one evening, but I was just so knackered by the time I got home. So what are we doing now? We're recording it when I'm sick and knackered.
Yes. But so, you can just go straight back to bed after this, Paul.
But do you want to know a good thing?
Yes.
This is the second from last show of this season.
Right.
So we got this one, and then we got next one, and then we're going to have a big break. We're going to have another month-long break over Christmas.
Yep.
Because I've got to finish my book.
Are you allowed to say that now?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so. I can't remember. Yeah, no, we've talked about the book before.
No, we haven't.
Have we not?
I don't think so. You keep saying this thing I'm not allowed to talk about yet, but really want to.
Oh, well, I am allowed to now. Maybe, I really should have talked about that then.
Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. I don't know.
So I'm writing a book called Digital Adaptation, which is about how companies need to essentially do more than just bolt a website onto the side of what they're doing and how they need to reorganise to be more digitally capable as organisations. So I'm writing that, and that's coming out mid-March, he says confidently.
Yeah, of course it is.
And so that means that I need to... I've written it, the first draft, and I've now got to go back through it because I'm writing it with Smashing Magazine and Vitaly is a Nazi. and it's making me... He's making me rewrite loads of it because he wants it to be better. How dare he? like what I'm producing isn't at perfection to begin with. So yes, I'm going to be rewriting.
I'm just slightly balking at the fact that you called a German a Nazi, but there you go.
Well, he isn't actually a German.
Oh, right, that's okay then.
He's from Belarus or somewhere, or I don't know, some strange country that doesn't really count.
Fair enough then. We'll just
can't
let that one slide.
I just said that. Oh, Vitaly, I love you. You know I do. No, I'm really good friends with him. Well, probably not after this show, but there you go. So, yes, I'm right now. So, that next season, we're going to look at that as a topic. Basically, the whole of next season is going to be a massive, big advert for the book.
That'd be good, though, because even though I do keep saying, yes, I'll read it, Paul, and I haven't.
You haven't looked at it in the slightest.
This is good, though, because it means that I'll get to... You know, not only will I get to learn about it and, you know, read excerpts from it during the show, I'll also get your commentary on why you said what you said.
Well, actually, I'm not going to read excerpts from the show. What I'm going to do instead, because this season, I don't know about you, but I think this season's worked really well and people have come back with some excellent comments and commentary and that kind of stuff.
Yep, true.
So I'm essentially going to build on that approach. So instead of me saying what the book says, what I'm going to do is raise some of the questions that the book raises and then let the community answer it.
Yeah, no doubt I'll disagree with half of it anyway.
Yeah, I'm not telling you what I've written in the book because you'll only argue with me. So, no, we'll see what other people say instead, which would be really cool. Except, really, I could have done with doing that ages ago and then I could have got them to write the book for me. And that would have been much cooler. No doubt we'll my opinion will come out, as it always does.
No, maybe.
Maybe.
I think it might.
I said no doubt, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
I think it's even stronger than that, mine, isn't it, really? It will come out.
It's an absolute certainty.
Yes. So should we talk about this week's show? Because we've got a couple of... by the way, I'm bloody freezing in here. This room, I've got... We had to... You know that I shared this on the show about how I had to replumb the whole house because I tried to put one radiator in one room, which was my office. Mm-hmm. And now the bloody radiator doesn't work.
What? Because you did it?
No, we paid a proper person. Real money and everything. A lot of money. A resentful amount of money.
And now you've had to plug in a heater.
No, we haven't got that far. I'm just sitting here frizzing.
Frizzing.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
We ought to get this show out of the way quickly. Cause
I don't even know what that word was meant to be.
Freezing, maybe.
Freezing and shivering. They're the two words I was going for. Right. Oh, God, I'm hysterical. Okay, so we're going to talk about this whole debate. You know that people say, oh, you should release early.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to ask whether that's actually bollocks or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that the actually quality maybe is better than speed. So we're going to look at that.
Okay.
And then we're also going to look at some nuances of what our job as web designers actually is. And is our job just to build websites or should we be educating clients? And is that part of our responsibility too? So should we launch in with the release early versus the other thing?
Let's do that.
Right, what are we talking about? Oh, yes, speed versus quality. So, do you like the new way I've organised the notes, Marcus? You haven't even looked.
I'm looking at them now. What? The
blue bit at the top, which summarises what the person was getting at.
Ah, right, okay.
So that's really useful, isn't it? Because you kind of know what they're going to say before you start reading it.
That is useful, because sometimes I start reading it thinking, is this going to make any sense?
I know. So, yeah, I'm a bit more organised this week, which is remarkable.
It is.
It's probably because I had 2 weeks to get it ready, isn't it?
Yes.
So just as we get to the end of the season, I'm starting to get organised. So this house proposes that it is more important to make a good first impression than to release early. So this is the debate that there's this kind of thing, especially within the startup community, that, you know, you release early, you get your product out there, then you get real users using it, and that gives you ideas about, you know, how it could be improved and, you know, all of that kind of thing. Mm. So there is this kind of attitude that you should be releasing early.
I have one complaint about the new notes.
What's your complaint?
They're not categorised into for and against.
No, I kind of dropped that.
But, you know, it helps me, Paul.
Well, the reason I kind of dropped it is because half the comments that come back these days are, well, it depends.
So, well, yes.
So I figured we'll just, you know, we're getting towards the end of the show. We'll let it go. Not the show, the season.
Yeah.
We'll let it go a bit more messy.
Okay.
And allow it just to happen as it does.
Which it kind of does anyway.
Yeah. So what's the point? So yeah, there are a lot. There are benefits to releasing early. Absolutely, that, you know, that it gives you a chance to. It's like real user testing with real users in a real environment. Mm. But then, then on the other side of the fence is this kind of the old adage of you only get one chance to make a first impression, and how I have witnessed kind of web applications and websites being shot down before they've even been properly launched. You know, if users visit the site and discover that it's missing the one piece of key functionality or content they want, they might never take a second look. Mm. You know, worse still, if you encounter a buggy site, you may conclude that those behind the product are incapable of producing anything better, so definitely wouldn't return. It's a kind of interesting one for me, because in some senses, that's what I've been doing last week up in University of Strathclyde. We've been, you know, making the stuff that we've produced in, you know, 1 week visible to anybody within the university to have a look at, just so that they can see the work in progress. Now, we've plastered it with, you know, this isn't ready yet, da-da-da-da-da-da. But, you know, it's an interesting one. Are we actually doing more harm than good? And, of course, a lot of people launch their products as beta, don't they? Mm. But nobody takes beta seriously anymore, do they?
Yeah, no, because everyone does it.
Exactly. So you never actually believe beta as beta. And half the betas that are produced are actually extremely high quality. Mm. So they don't feel like betas, therefore you don't call them, you know, treat them as a beta.
Yes, quite.
Sorry, I needed to take a drink.
That's okay. I was doing the same thing.
Oh, no, we timed that really badly, didn't we?
I mean, we
need some kind of signal. I'm going to cough
slurp
when I
time.
Need a drink. Yeah.
We have first-hand experience of not releasing early and paying for it.
That is true.
With Get Sign Off.
Yes. Do you want to explain that to people?
Yeah. We created a pay-for app, which was created for the design community to help present mock-ups, design ideas, that kind of thing to their clients. And it was, you know, it was a good product, good idea, but we took too long to get it out, and we kind of missed the boat, really. Mm.
But that was in principle, yes, that was we should have released earlier rather than fannying about with the, you know, making it perfect. But in actual fact, we fannied about not doing anything.
Well, yes.
Because we were so busy with client work and we didn't prioritise it. Mm. So that's a slightly different problem. But yes, I mean, in principle, I agree. Andrew talks about something that's very kind of trendy within the web world, which is this idea of a minimum viable product. He says, I think it's important to release early with a minimum viable product. Try saying that when you got cold. Mm-hmm. Feedback from your early adopters will help shape your product and ensure you don't spend years building the perfect solution that no one will pay for. Now, I totally agree with that, Andrew, but what's a minimum viable product? You know,
that's what it comes down to.
Yes.
This is the entire argument here is, you know, you've got to release something that A, has some kind of value to the people that are going to be using it, and B, represents what the final thing will be. Otherwise, no one's going to... Well, you just gave the example earlier. Whereas, you know, if you're not providing the core piece of content or the core functionality, then people are going to go, well, this is rubbish, and never come back again.
Yeah. John talks about the core functionality. He suggests that getting the core values of the website, like what, why, and how, etc., sorted and ready, along with the simple UI, and then build from there. Start simple with a strong core and then add on and adjust as you go. Buffer is a really good example of this, right? When Buffer first rolled out, they only supported Twitter. And they only supported basically adding tweets to a kind of predefined or a list that would go out at predefined times. And everybody complained, oh, you don't support Facebook. And they said, Facebook is coming. It's fine. You know, this is our core product here. And so they added Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Google Plus and all the others. And then they, you know, everyone was going, oh, we want to be able to schedule tweets to go out whenever we want. And so over time they added that as well. Mm. And I think they did it really well, actually. I think their approach was excellent. So yeah, absolutely. Focus on your core. Do the bare minimum. But it still does ask this question. See, the great thing about taking this approach, of course, is what Federica said, which she talks, I've found that no matter how many tests you do on an application, a real user will always do something different or something somewhat unexpected. So that kind of encourages you to go for this minimum viable product and launch that early. But then the question is, what makes a minimal viable product? And David said something quite interesting about this, which is something that I've said before, and I think, and therefore I agree with. I was going to say, I think I agree with, but if I've said it, then surely I agree with it. Actually, I'm very conflicted like that. He talks about our general approach is to launch when the site is complete insofar that its functionality, is deemed superior to whatever it is replacing. Refinements and additional features can and should always follow. The biggest danger about launching when finished or perfect is that it leads to the project mentality of site launch, job done, when almost every website should be subject to continual improvement. So it is working on the basis that there's something already there, but that is a really good measurement of when you've got a minimal viable product. Mm. It's better than what was there before.
I suppose this depends what we mean. I mean, let's view this from not from a kind of startup building an app point of view. Let's view it from an agency like Headscape doing a paid for project for a client.
Okay.
Because I'm sat here thinking, well, in old fashioned language, phased development is something that we absolutely support and still promote. Build something, build the core, to use that word again, build the basic version of something, and then add features as a phase two and a phase three as you go along. But is the question here, should we change the original scope of the project to kind of say at 75% done, actually this is good enough? Or are we talking about phase development that we've agreed in up front?
I think it's good to agree phase development up front because it stops that, as David said, that, you know, launch a site and you're done.
Yeah.
But I don't think you necessarily need to define what those future phases are because I don't think you really know what they are until you've got a minimal viable product out there that users are using.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is phase one.
Yes.
We'll agree on the scope of phase one.
Yes.
With the client up front, this is what's going to cost, blah, 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 blah.
Agreed.
Are we saying here, in some cases, actually, 75%, say, 60%, 90% through that initial scope, that actually, well, no, this is looking good. We should, we should release it now rather than do that extra 10% that's going to be fiddly and difficult.
Ooh, that's a good question. How does that work? How would that, in principle, yes.
Yeah.
I'm trying to work out how that works from a contractual point of view when they've paid us for the extra, 25% or whatever.
Well, you would still do the work, but you'd do it after launch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely then. Yes, I mean, that makes a huge amount of sense to me. Get something out there, see what happens, and then refine it afterwards.
So, yeah. So if it seems like the right thing to do, release as early as you can, I guess, is the
yeah, but that's so woolly, isn't it?
Well, no, because it's different with every project.
Yeah, I guess so. That's that. Yeah, you're right. It is. So it depends, basically.
Well, yeah, obviously everything depends. But I think but that's something new in my head. I don't think. I mean, maybe I do this automatically, but to think we need to be looking to launch as early as is sensible and viable, I don't think I think like that.
No, I don't think we do. Not normally. Mm. Not on a fixed price project. No. But yeah, no, there's absolutely, it's a good idea.
So there you go.
See, we've realised something ourselves.
So
probably everybody else has been doing for years. Yeah. I just wanted to mention Andy's comment, because for me, this is quite a nice way of doing it, and this is the approach that we're taking on the University of Strathclyde. Sorry, I am going to be talking about them a lot at the moment because they're going around in my head.
Yeah.
He says, I would push early on a restricted access basis, such as a beta test. This then means that you can change the site, fix any bugs, and get great feedback. It also creates an air of mystery, for want of a better word, that makes others want to get inside. So it's a kind of supply and demand scenario. So what we're doing with University of Strathclyde is, at the moment, is, you know, it's largely, I mean, actually anybody could get to it, but we're only telling people internally within the university about the site. And then, you know, so it's a relatively restricted access to that. And then, as we become more confident in it, we're going to push it to a beta site where we will start putting notes on the existing site saying things like, hey, try out our beta, or we'll promote it with the Facebook group and stuff like that to drive more traffic to it.
Yeah.
And then eventually we will swap one site with the other when we feel that the new site is better than the old site.
Yeah, good plan.
That's essentially a kind of version of the restricted access that Andy's talking about. He's thinking more about web apps, you know, that have closed betas. You have to be a bit careful with that, because it can be a slippery slope, this whole creating an air of mystery and supply and demand thing, because it can piss people off too.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not worthy.
Yeah.
I'm never worthy. I'm never invited to these things.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Marcus. I'm invited to them all the time, if it makes you feel any better.
Not really.
No, I got goodie packs through, so I do like it when people send me stuff, physical stuff. It was really cool. I'm not going to mention who it's from, mine, because that would be then courting it, and that would be wrong. I also got sent a Leap Motion. Have you seen those things?
Nope.
They're basically a little box that you plug your computer in to, and then it's a tiny little box, like size of a matchbox, bit bigger, bit longer than a matchbox, small matchbox, not a big matchbox, not a kitchen matchbox, not for kitchen.
Yeah, I understand,
matches.
Paul.
Okay. I think I'm losing it. And then you wave your hands around it, and it detects your hand movements, and you can do all kinds of cool stuff. So you feel like a really cheap magician. You've not seen this?
No.
You'll check it out. Leap Motion.
So what, you can just say it turns your computer off or something like that?
No. You can control applications and like 3D packages. You can, as if you're holding the object, you can rotate it.
Ooh.
And you can scroll at pages and turn page. You know, it's like turn the pages of a book just by flipping in the air. Not flipping as in the real
time.
I'd like
to see that.
No. Flipping off your computer. It's one of those technologies. It's ever so cheap. It's only about like $80 or something, which is remarkable for what it does, because it feels like you're in Minority Report, basically.
Yeah.
But although it's really cool, it's absolutely useless. It's fun to play with, but has little practical use. So, yes. Anyway, I'm going to include it on my Christmas geeks list, because it's relatively cheap and a lot of fun to play with, even if it's not actually useful. Anyway, enough reviews. I really wasn't intending to do that. There you go. What was I talking about?
I've got no idea. I'm off looking at jokes now.
Should we just give up and move on to the next part? We were talking about Andy and his web applications. Yes, that he can piss people off. That was it. The one I was thinking about is Mailbox.
Well, yes.
That really pissed a lot of people off. But then that was really difficult because they had to scale their servers. So I kind of understood where they were coming from.
Mm.
So, you know, difficult, isn't it? Just difficult. It's all very difficult.
But when I finally got to the end of the queue, I just thought, can't be arsed.
Well, I use it every day. So, you know, different things to different people.
Exactly.
It'd be interesting to see what they do when they release their desktop version. Because they've now not really got an excuse for scaling the servers anymore because they got bought by Dropbox and they've had ample time to scale the servers with the iPhone app. So if they try the same trick again, you'll know that it's just marketing bullshit.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. Anyway, let's move on to our next topic. Okay, so our next topic is... This House proposes that it's the responsibility of a web designer to educate clients about running their websites. So this is kind of me going on my hobby horse of that as web designers, it's not just our job to build websites. That we have it in our heads that all we're responsible for is building a website. And I don't think that is the case. We're also responsible for providing customer service, which is an area we're often shit at. And also, I think we're responsible for educating clients as well about how to get the most from their website. I recently wrote in a post called How to Finish a Web Project, link in the show notes. I wrote, to my mind, delivering a website is only half of a designer's job. It is our responsibility to ensure the client knows everything they need to in order to run a successful website. Which is a pretty bold statement. And I can understand that people might disagree with it. After all, we're rarely paid specifically to educate clients or provide this kind of consultancy. Also, clients don't always recognise their need for this kind of advice, so why then attempt to provide a service that some clients do not want and do not pay for? And I think my kind of logic is that, well, they pay for a successful website, and we cannot make that happen on our own. That requires a client's contribution and involvement, so therefore, surely we have to educate them. But I open this up as a discussion to the community. And they got some real mixed and interesting feedback from it. I think we'll probably just move through some of this, read some of this one out. You, Marcus, pick out one and read one at random.
Sorry, I'm still looking at other things.
Yeah, I know, I'd lost you. I can tell when you're off looking at other things, which is why I picked on you, like in a class when there's a child that's not paying attention.
Yeah, 2 + 2, Paul.
Now, you're supposed to give the answer, not the question.
Yeah, not the question.
So you're really not with it.
I don't agree with the House on this.
Okay.
I don't think there's one word in there that I don't agree with, which is responsible or responsibility. I don't think it's our responsibility. I think it's in our. It's advantageous to us to do it, but I don't think we have to.
So you don't think it's our responsibility to deliver a client a successful website? It's just to deliver them a website.
Depends on the project, I guess. It depends. This goes back to the conversation we've had in the past about, you know, small budget, small client stuff. Then you could probably argue that you're not being paid to do it. But it's still in your best interest to educate your clients because, A, their site will be more successful, they'll be happier. The next time they come around to doing a web project, even if it isn't with you, then it's more likely to be a more pleasant experience for whoever does that work.
Yeah.
All of that kind of thing. But anyway, yes, I'm going to read some stuff.
I like Lee's comment. Which is that he says, we define what we do, essentially. So he says, you should be absolutely clear about what services your business provides and at what rate and what is included when you are discussing a project. And so that would be, to my mind, that would negate my responsibility, using your words. So if I was working on a small project, it may be enough to define up front, look, you know, I can build your website, but it will not be successful unless... you take your responsibility in it as well. So maybe that is all the education you need to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Being clear about, you know, the limitations of what you can do.
And half the time you don't know what you need to educate your client in until, the requirement becomes obvious.
Yeah, that's true.
And that might be massive. And you might think, I can't afford to do this. I've got another project starting next week or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you can... I think in that situation, I can think of a case which we came across where, we got in and we were starting to work with a client and we realised that their in-house developers were not up to the job, which obviously is a huge issue and not one that we can resolve in 5 minutes. That I felt the best I could do is point out to the client that this was an issue. And then offer them some ways that we could help, but they would be charged for that. So we could go in and do training with them or whatever else, or mentor those developers. If it's going to cost a lot of money, I'm not suggesting you shouldn't charge for it.
Yeah. Well, I agree then. Shall I read some more?
Yeah, go on.
I'm going to start at the top. Chris says, everybody,
Don't read the blue bits. I've been making that mistake.
Just for me. Yeah. Right, okay. The responsibility of training should fall upon everyone, not a single person. There are aspects to some projects that are out of the remit for designers and developers alone.
Which I entirely agree with. I always have this problem, right? When you write anything, that there's no catch-all term for... content strategist, UX designer, back-end developer, for all the web people. I normally call them web professionals, but that sounds ballsy. So when I say this house proposes that it's the responsibility of a web designer, I actually mean anybody in the web team. Mm-hmm. So I actually completely agree with Chris over that extends, it might be the project manager that has to teach people stuff, anybody from our team. In fact, our project managers regularly run content management training sessions. In fact, we still do, don't we?
Yes, we do.
I don't know why I said used to. I'm horribly out of date with my own company. So yeah, I agree with Chris over that. I think he's right. I want to read Some Dudes one, simply because he's called Some Dudes.
Okay.
Because that's cool.
He's not called Some Dudes.
Some Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that web development is currently in a similar place to the early desktop publishing. An analogy I have often used, Mr. Some Dude. Just because I can hold a pen, it doesn't mean I can write Shakespeare. Just because I can log into a CMS, it doesn't mean that I can create a decent website. So yes, it is our job as web professionals, he uses the web professional words, to deal with this. Offer training and advice. I couldn't agree with that more. You could have almost transplanted that and put it into the conversation we had about CMSs, couldn't you? And I think if you offer training and advice, yes, a client might turn it down, and yes, you can't force it on them, but we should... I think would you agree with this, Marcus, that most web designers should offer training and advice, even if it's not accepted?
Yes.
Even if it's, as an additional paid thing, it should be a service we provide.
I agree. I think my son is trying to talk to me, Paul.
Okay.
2 seconds.
All right.
I'm wandering out of the room.
Right, so I'm just going to carry on, actually. I could do that. There's no reason why not. Because actually, somebody follows up with the win-win scenario that we were talking about earlier. Because Marcus was saying it was a win-win scenario, and David talks about this. He says, yes, web agencies should work together with clients, guiding them through the digital jungle. Ooh, I like that. It's a digital jungle out there, people. With the digital jungle, with education, nurturing, etc. It's a win-win as the client's website continually improves and the agency gets ongoing work. So, absolutely. I think that's a really key point. So, yeah, is Marcus back?
See you, mate.
Bye. Oh, no, he's saying goodbye to his son. His poor son. His son's had to go and have an X-ray. It's all very traumatic and quite moving.
Sorry,
it's
about
a moving
that.
Story. I've carried on without you.
Okay.
I don't know whether that was a good thing. I was talking about the moving story of you having to rush out for your son and take him to the doctors, and how it's a huge, huge, example of what a loving father is like.
Yes, that's right, Paul. Yeah, he's okay.
Dying, he is.
He's not dying. He just he's got a rattly chest.
Rattly chest.
And he was really poorly when he was a little boy.
Oh, was he? Oh, I didn't know that.
Always a bit of a kind of an alarm. And his oxygen level was down a bit this morning. We're not talking about a little boy now, but he's 18 now.
Yeah.
So they said, oh, you better go and get a chest x-ray.
Oh, now I'm feeling rude about being... No, I'm feeling sorry about being rude. Or perhaps I'm feeling rude about being sorry. One or the other. I didn't realise he was ill as a kid.
Yeah.
Nasty.
He got pneumonia when he was 5.
Oh!
Over Christmas.
Oh, well, that's scary. Yeah. Actually, I did know that, now you said, because I remember the over Christmas bit.
Yeah.
Shows how little interest I take in the lives of my colleagues. So I was talking about this win-win scenario that you were talking about earlier.
Yes.
Which is what David was saying. So it's really cool. You can edit out all of this if you want to, but leave it in. People are interested in your life.
Really?
No.
Really not.
So Simon
anyway,
says...
I've got to say he's okay. Otherwise people might worry.
Well, you did just say.
Did I?
You said he had a bit of a rattly chest, although that could be extremely serious
That was what started. That's why we went to the doctor in the first place. But then I got to the going to the hospital for the x-ray bit.
Oh, yes.
he's all right. He's just got an inflammation on his lungs, which is just a...
That sounds quite serious.
Yeah. The doctor said, tall, thin people, because he's really tall and thin, can get holes in their lungs and things like this.
Oh, my word!
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's nothing like that.
Holes in his lungs?
He hasn't got holes in his lungs.
No, I know.
He's just got a slight inflammation, which is a virus, and it will go away of its own accord.
Why do doctors feel the need to tell you things like this? It's like they don't. It's like whenever you get anything done, they tell you every worst case scenario. We went recently to get injections for.
You managed to get this?
Yes, I got it in. I didn't realise I was doing it. I had to get injections for the Maldives, and they go through all the different, you need this and you need that and the other. And it was my 10-year-old son sitting there who worries at the drop of a hat, and she's going through well. You could really do the, so if you were going backpacking around here, I'd suggest that you had, a typhoid injection. But as you're going to stay in a really posh hotel, you probably don't need it. But if you want it, you can have it. So we were going, no, we don't need that for, the place that we're going to stay. But James is left there going, oh my word. So, yes.
We don't have the typhoid one that really hurts. It's one of those injections that goes in, you think that's fine. And then it feels like someone's hit you on the arm with a hammer.
Oh, good. I'm glad I didn't have it then.
And I had one, I don't know if it was typhoid, but I had one in my leg 25 years ago that was fine, but I stood up and fell over. I stood up from the chair and actually properly fell over.
That's really quite embarrassing. So you can't cut all of that stuff out now, because otherwise none of this section will make any sense whatsoever.
I won't cut any of it out.
No. Because you're too lazy.
Yeah, I'm certainly not going to cut it out. Because, Paul, have I told you where I'm going next November?
Right, so let's move on. So, Simon says to me... Go on, where are you going?
I don't think I have told you, have I?
No, where are you going?
We're going to go to Vietnam, Cambodia and Thailand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How long for?
About 17 days, it looks like.
I was going to say, because if it was only a week, were you splitting up and going to a different country each?
It's because, I'm a bit of a stay-at-home, really. It's just my wife saying, we've been married for 25 years, it's our silver wedding, take me somewhere on an adventure. I want to go here. And I'm like, oh, right, yeah, that's... I've always wanted to go to Halong Bay, or Halong Bay, however you say it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That sounds superb.
Yeah.
Wow, no. That's good. No, fair dues. No, it's fine.
So I've got to spend the next year paying for it.
Yeah, I know. That'll be an expensive old trip. Because I know your wife, she won't want to go backpacking it, will she?
No.
Although neither would you, to be frank.
No.
So I'm still feeling buried talking about us not wanting to rough it. The fact that we're going out for a Headscape do recently and everybody else is sharing rooms except for me and Marcus, because we're too much of snobs.
Well, I will not stand by that. I was quite happy to share a room, but you insisted, Paul.
Oh, I didn't insist that you did it. I insisted me, but I thought we would all have single rooms.
No one wants to share with me, anyway.
Or Ed. Because both of you snore like, I don't know, something prehistoric.
Big bears, basically. I mean, yeah. I'm not a big bear, but I do snore like one.
Yeah, Dan's got an excuse. Not Dan. Ed. Why did I say Dan? Ed. So anyway, let's talk about Simon, because poor old Simon is waiting in bated breath for us to quote him on the podcast. I bet he isn't. I bet he's not even listening. To most of those businesses, I forgot. Do you know what? I've even forgotten what we were talking about. Yeah, what were we talking about?
The other stuff. Holidays.
Sickness, we weren't talking about that. Hospitals. We were talking about our responsibility to educate. That was it.
Yeah, but this is boring.
Should we just give up? No, we've got loads of other people. Right. Simon says, to most of those businesses, they are stepping into new territory. Their business proposition will not have revolved around an online startup idea, but probably some traditional offline product or service. It is up to us to educate them about what is becoming an increasingly complex landscape. Now, there is a reason why Simon, I was so pointed about getting Simon's a quote on the show, is because that's exactly what I'm talking about in my book, about how, you know, essentially most people started their businesses before the web and are just not in a position to really understand how to leverage the, I can't believe I've just used the word leverage.
Leverage the synergy of the
situation. Leverage the synergy of the web.
Yeah, exactly.
So that, yeah.
We are doing some blue sky thinking at the moment.
We are.
And we should hit the ground running.
Exactly. Alistair says, no, it's not the responsibility of a web designer to educate. And he says this very, very definitively. No, it's not the responsibility of web designers to educate clients about how to run their websites. It is the responsibility of web designers to ensure the client have access to the educational information about how to run their website.
Isn't that the same thing?
No, I think what he's saying is we should just be pointing them in the right direction of the kind of things they should be reading and looking up on.
But the pointing is educating them, isn't it?
I think we're splitting, what is it? Splitting hairs. Splitting semantics.
No, but that's not a thing. Yeah, I disagree with that.
I disagree with it, but for a slightly different reason. I disagree with it because I don't think it's enough just to point them at a list apart. Or even BOAG World. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because it's not. I'm not sure that that's particularly for them.
No.
You need to make what, you know, the education, for want of a better word, relevant to their situation and relevant to their business. Just saying, go and read a list apart, though it is obviously interesting a lot of the time, it might not be to them. They might think, this is completely irrelevant to me.
Absolutely. So you need to pick out the bits that they need to know, really.
Exactly. Yeah.
Dean puts an interesting angle on it, and I think we'll finish with Dean because this has become very waffly. He says, it's a real shame to see all the hard work put into creating a site wasted with a lack of bad management, right? Equally, it's such a pleasure when a client takes ownership and pride in their site. Without a doubt, these are the sites that generate the best results for everyone involved. So he's saying, do it for yourself, really. Do it for your own sense of job satisfaction. And the reason I resonate so much with that is because for us, that led to a whole new stream of business, didn't it? You know, I got to a point where I was fed up. I actually wrote a post, link in the show notes, to a post I wrote about essentially me going, I've had enough. I've had enough of delivering websites that are then left to fester and die. I've had enough of delivering templates that don't get integrated properly. I'm going to do something about it. And that's when we started getting into, you know, digital strategy and governance and helping clients with all these other areas that is now a big part of what we do. Because I wanted that job satisfaction of being able to look at a website and go, yes, that's come out well and it will continue to survive well and it will grow after we walk away. And I love that. I love that. I loved that even last week with University of Strathclyde, where, you know, I could take a team of people or me, Lee, and Chris, to be fair, before I take all the credit, you know, we could take a team of people that never worked in an agile way and never come across things like pre-processors and never, you know, never thought modularly and in terms of pattern libraries or anything like that. It had a completely different way of working, and we introduced them to a whole new way of doing things that would make their lives so much easier. And this week they've got great feedback from internally within the organization because we've been able to take them into a different way of working. And that was just great. That is satisfaction for me. And that's probably why I want to educate people the most. That sounded like a bit of a preach, didn't it, really?
It did, yeah.
I went back to my Christian roots or something. Or my grandfather's Pentecostal fire and brimstone stuff. And join me, dear brothers, in our quest for better something. Trailed off a bit.
The good stuff.
Yeah. So, I think that about right. Don't laugh at me, Marcus. I'm incoherent. Leave me alone. Have you got a joke then?
I have. I've been spending the whole
bloody section
trying
not contributing
to find a joke. But this one from Ian Lasky, which I obviously I like most of the time.
Can I say, what you ought to do is prepare the joke beforehand.
Yes.
Never will you do that. It's like every time I talk about you getting things done, you go, yeah, and then never do it. Every time I talk about inbox zero, you go, yeah, and never do it. Every time I suggest that you might want to write a list, you go, yeah, and
I
never
write
do
lists.
It. Yeah, my
no, ass. I do write lists.
Every time, it feels sometimes like we're married, Marcus, and over the years, those little things really begin to bug you. 25 years next year, Marcus.
Yes, indeed.
You must be like 90. You got married very, very young.
Yes.
How old were you, actually?
22.
Were you really?
Yes.
God.
I was a dad at 25.
Wow. How old was your wife when you got married?
Same.
We're
5 days apart. I'm 5 days older than her.
Oh, really?
Oh.
That must make birthdays feel really pointless, because essentially you're just swapping gifts.
Well, no, it's a really good excuse to have a big party that lasts about a week.
Ah, yes, I like that logic. That's good. Although, actually, I realised that was fundamentally flawed, what I just said, because that's what Christmas is, isn't it?
Well, when you each give gifts to everyone,
yeah,
each other.
I know, pointless.
It's bloody pointless.
I'm really into the Christmas spirit, you can tell. Go on then, what's this Ian Lasky's joke?
A woman takes her unconscious pet rabbit to the vet. He checks it over and says, "I'm sorry, but it's dead. There's nothing I can do." She sobs, "There must be." "Okay," says the vet, who leaves the room and returns with a Labrador, who sniffs the rabbit up and down, before turning around and making a sad face. The vet then brings in a cat, who looks all over the rabbit before shaking its head. "Sorry," says the vet. "Vet, there really is no hope. That'll be £250, please." The woman splutters, £250 for that?" The vet replies, "It would have only been £35, but for the..." Sorry, ruining the punchline. "But the extra is for the lab report and the CAT scan."
That shouldn't have amused me, but did. It's a sad state of affairs.
It's like the idea of a Labrador that makes a sad face. That's what gets me.
Yes, yes, I know. Well, and the cat just sitting there shaking its head.
Yeah,
No. Computer says no. Right, so that's it. We've survived it. Only one more of this season to go.
And the Christmas one.
Oh, yeah, I forgot the Christmas one. Yeah, that's an anomaly that will come partway through randomly when we get round to it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, then, see you guys next week for the last ever show. Don't forget to check out the
It's not going to be the last ever show, Paul.
No, I know. I want to go back to bed now. I'm going to go. I come back next week. We'll be talking about other stuff. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Bye. Bye. Running websites on a daily basis. Bye.